You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded.
Welcome to the Vietnamese Podcast. Today I have Bobo here with me. This is an interesting time for you and me because we actually did a podcast before.
Yes. That was 2 years ago?
2 years ago, but we couldn't air it.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of things that we said at the time that we couldn't air it.
Yeah.
So we're going to start all over. But since then, you and I have had so much experience together. So I'm glad that we got this chance to redo it.
Yeah. And I feel like I've grown so much as a person since then. And I had so many different opinions. And during my journey, I was like, all right, should we release it? Should we not? And I was like, all right, maybe we should take a break on it, come back to it and see, if we should release it. And
yeah.
We're like, all right, I think you gave me a lot of space to grow these past 2 years. And I think you've seen that development of my artist self and how I'm starting to become part of the community and all these things. And I was like, dude, I think a lot of my opinions have changed, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
Because I think so many people are like, especially Vietnamese people, we're just kind of stubborn. You know what I mean? And I was a stubborn motherfucker.
Yeah. So. and just watching the journey is beautiful for me because, I get to see the change in a beautiful way, because I don't think people change for the most part in bad ways.
Yeah.
Because the more we're exposed to each other or our community, the more we grow and the more we grow, the more enhanced our views become.
Yeah. And I think it just takes I wasn't very open back then. And I think I went through a lot of experiences where it's like, all right, and just having so much love around me.
Yeah.
Especially from you guys and the Vietnamese community. I was like, all right, let me just accept the love. And accepting the love is so hard, because I think it, the way we grew up sometimes, it's kind of interesting how we accept love. You know what I mean? I think that's a thing that I've been thinking about recently. And it comes in all different ways. And you just have to be open to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
how did you grow up? I know you didn't grow up around a lot of Vietnamese people. Or
yeah.
You didn't grow up in Southern California.
No, I grew up in the Bay Area, California. And it was a place called San Mateo. And then, I wasn't really exposed to many Vietnamese people. There's San Jose right there. But I never really it was just my family, and there's all different types of races and ethnicities there, but I never really had a Vietnamese friend growing up. So when I would talk, it would just be with my family and we would take trips down to Orange County and that's where my grandma lived. And my mom would kind of just drop me off there for a month and I would get to walk around and see the culture, but I never really was able to get immersed into it and have friends and a community that spoke Vietnamese and taught me all the traditions of it. So it was really in the family,
I think a lot about kids like you. You're not a kid. I'm saying the kids that grow up like you, who become adults like you now.
I feel like a kid though, so it's okay.
That's not what I'm saying though. I think about you a lot because when we don't get to grow up around Vietnam,
or
we don't get to grow up around Vietnamese communities, we become a product of our environment, whether it's Mexicans or Black, Black America or White America.
Yeah.
We are not the same as the Vietnamese that are growing up together, right?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how you think that affected you growing up. I know now that you have some space between the last time we talked and now, but tell me a little bit about how that difference of like the last 2 years have really affected the way you view the Vietnamese community. And the reason why it's so important for me is because I like to track this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so how I grew up in the first place, like the Bay Area is such a, it's such a crazy place because everybody is there. And then there's a Bay Area specific kind of language that it doesn't matter where you're like, you know, black, white, Latin, Asian, everyone is kind of the same. You know, everyone uses the same lingo. Everyone like hangs out together. And
is it different than LA?
Yes. Yeah.
Really?
Like even like a lot of like the music that we make out there, it's like, it's kind of crazy. It's interesting. You know what I mean? And a lot of people don't make it out of the Bay. It's like kind of
a bubble.
But then you hear so many influences and like, you know, like DJ Mustard and like all these like new LA, all these like LA artists essentially that they take these certain beats and bounces from the Bay Area. But the Bay Area doesn't really get credited like that. But, you know, there's like the hyphy movement that, you know, I grew up with. And yeah, it was very interesting. But even in San Mateo, there was a lot of like every single type of culture. You know, there was skate culture. There was like gang culture. There was like, you know, the rich. And my high school is very weird too, because they would like smash all the kids from like Hillsboro and like really like high class places, and then like the super hood kids, and all in one school.
Wow.
So I got to experience, you know, when I was partying in high school, we would go from, in the same night, we would go from a trap house to like a $20 million mansion all in one night. And we would just, it would just be like such like a weird experience on how to connect with each individual. And I think that's why it makes me so good at like talking to different kinds of people, because I was like, oh yeah, I had to learn how to slang like this. I had to learn how to slang like this. And over here, I talk like this over here, and you know, adapting as a chameleon. So I think that's why I'm always interested in where people came from as well. You know,
when did you start thinking about music?
Kind of all my life, but I think I grew up with around so many talented people. I was never like, oh, like I could do that. Mm. You know what I mean? So I kind of just, and I was like doing martial arts at the time. And that was like my life focus. I wanted to be like the next Bruce Lee, Jackie
really?
Chan. Yeah.
Really?
So that's why I did like martial arts tricking and stuff like that. And yeah, I was very competitive.
You still do it now?
I still kind of, there's like a little bit, like that's why I do the backflip in my show now, because it's like kind of like an homage to my tricking days. It's like, oh, I could still do this. I still got it in me. And like the rage and like the chase of my passion, that's, it comes from that culture.
How long were you doing martial arts for?
Oh, dude, since I was like 7. Yeah. Up until probably I was like 26. So pretty much all my life.
And how did that music seep into the martial arts world?
I think I just always loved music. And so tricking is a specific sport. It's like it's kind of new, but it's a variant of like a martial arts, and then like breakdancing culture, dance culture, and like acrobatics and all these things. So you chase these combos, and it's like the progression is very similar to the skate culture, where it was like very rugged at first, and then now there's like new rules and how you do you like judge things. And yeah, the sports is growing and it's very beautiful. But back then, it's like you try like a backflip and you eat shit until you get it. So that's kind of like my mentality with things. Like, oh, I'm gonna eat shit for the first, you know, 20 times I try this, but eventually I'm gonna figure out that technique and then I'm gonna get it, right? So applying that mentality to art is kind of just natural for me, coming from that world.
And when did you start the music?
I've only been making music for like seriously for like maybe 4 years. You know, I did like a couple, like, you know, I had like a rap crew in high school.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were just having fun. But then, you know, the pandemic kind of hit and all the photography slowed down. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should just, like, what am I waiting for? I should just try this. Why not? You know, and then I had to learn all like the basic rules of music and, you know, try to like train my voice. And I didn't realize, like, I never really thought that it was just like a muscle. And like, you just have to study and like train your brain and your body and your vocals. And then I kind of just started applying the same methods. And yeah, I was like, oh yeah, of course the first 20 are going to suck.
That's crazy that you started just 4 years ago, because I saw you perform about 2 years ago and it looked like you were on stage for 10 years.
I appreciate that.
No, swear to God.
I appreciate that.
It looked like you've been at it for a long time, but I think now it makes sense because of martial arts background.
Yeah.
And sort of like that journey of like, it's part of it, right? If you think about it, because there's rhythm.
Yes.
There's, you know, there's routine in an act.
Yes.
In a performance that you do on stage.
Yeah.
It's kind of all the same.
It's all the same. Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, I would go up and do like my open forms and perform, and you have to be serious and you need to like learn the ride of like how you move and stuff like that, right? So it's kind of the same thing. And plus, I think being a photographer for all like these amazing artists, I got to study literally every night when they're on stage. Oh, what works on stage? What doesn't work on stage? How do I do stage banter? How do I connect with the crowd? Even if I'm a nobody, nobody knows me, but how am I going to connect with these people?
You have a lot of stage presence. I mean, that's why I'm...
That. Thank you, man.
That's why I fuck with you, right?
I appreciate
that's
that.
I'm here because it's like, this is some personality in the making, you know. I can recognize that. It's like,
I appreciate that, man.
Seeing you on stage is electrifying.
Thank you.
You know, it's crazy. How did you pick the genre of music?
Because I grew up with like as a skater, I've always loved this shit. Like, okay, I'll tell you this. In fifth grade, I was like leaving my like private school to go to a public school, and like I was like begging my mom, I was like, please, like I want to go to a public school, I want to be surrounded by more people, and you know, like finding my identity and stuff, you know. And then I performed the anthem by Good Charlotte, and if you know that song, it's like, it's about like stepping out of place and like finding yourself, essentially. Like, fuck the rules. Like, this is me, essentially. And I didn't even realize it at the time of what that song was about. I just liked it, you know. And I think it just naturally, I just naturally gravitated towards like rock music. And plus, like, there was no Asian Americans making rock music.
There's still not a whole lot.
Yeah. Now I'm starting to discover so many people that are like, oh yeah, I grew up and everyone's kind of diving into it. And like, I was like, I love this shit. You know what I mean? And I think it's a beautiful thing. So, and also embracing American culture. So this is who I am. So, you know.
Yeah, there's actually a rock band here in LA, Southern California, called Yama. And a bunch of these rock musicians are playing heavy metal music.
Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, these guys are good.
Yeah.
They're super good.
Yeah.
They're,
yeah.
You know, guys who've been at this for a long time. And I just saw them at the Viper Room.
Oh, you know, yeah. Dude, playing. You gotta bring me to one of those shows next time.
I'm going on Sunday to the House of Blues.
Oh, okay, cool.
You should come with me.
Yeah.
If you're not doing anything on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm down.
Sunday. To check this out. This Sunday, I'm gonna head to...
Wait, House of Blues, Anaheim, right?
Anaheim, yeah.
Oh, that's where you're playing too.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's go. Right.
That's where Nam is playing.
Yeah, let's go, bro.
Nam is my social media producer, my producer. And he's part of it. I'm going to have him on the podcast one day very soon, too.
Oh, yeah.
But he teamed up with a bunch of metal guys, and now they're like playing and they're hardcore. And so, I had Hung, their lead singer, on years ago, too, three years ago. And it's just beautiful to watch Vietnamese people evolve into the next step.
Yeah.
But your story's special, and I'll tell you why. Because what I'm starting to appreciate a lot with a lot of artists is you don't start out wanting to become that.
Yeah.
Things just sort of evolve, and it's just like...
kind of goes.
It takes shape. And then you're like, all of a sudden you're like, you know that this was what you were born to do.
Yeah.
You just do it, and then it just feels right, and you don't doubt the path that you're doing.
Yeah. I think it's funny that you say that, because I feel like this was like my dad's plan for me all along. It's kind of weird. Cause so, you know, like the surname, like, Nguyen. So I feel like that's like what my dad's original last name was. Right. But when I was born, he gave me the name Isne Nguyen. So he changed my whole name.
Why?
And
Did you ever ask him?
And then he moved me away from the Vietnamese community. Right. And then, so he was, and I, you know, sometimes I question it and I ask him, he's like, because you're you. You're not anybody else.
Oh, dude.
And so I think that's why I've always like kind of had like a interesting identity crisis. My last name is N-U-Y-E-N-T, not Nguyen.
He just like randomly gave it to you at birth.
He gave me an artist name at birth. And then he changed his name too. He goes by his artist name, Pierre Leduc.
What does he do?
He's a painter, he's a poet, and like he like makes books, and he makes these like crazy Buddha paintings. And he's just like he's a full-time artist.
Yeah. Full-time artist.
Yeah. And like I never really like understood him growing up. And then it's funny, as like I naturally grow up, I find myself becoming more and more like him.
Wow.
With like my thoughts, my thought process, and like how I approach art, and how I basically live, you know what I mean? And I think all the identity issues, it's kind of made me who I am. And I kind of like, I enjoy the fight that it took to become me, right? I've learned how to embrace it now.
Wait, did you guys get along?
Yeah, for the most part. And like, you know, we've been getting a lot closer recently. And
my God, I would have loved to have a dad like that, right?
Who
really kind of like infused that from day one, right?
But the funny thing is he never like mentioned anything about it. He just like let me run wild, right?
Like let you run wild.
He literally just, yeah. And I was like, oh, dad, like, can you teach me how to paint? And he was like, just, you're not ready yet. Or like, just do your own thing. You know, he let me find what I wanted. He never enforced like, oh, this is what I'm good at, so I'm going to make you good at it. He was just like, just do what.
So there's never like, oh, become a doctor, become a lawyer.
Only for my mom. She was like you know what I mean? Like she was she grounded me.
And your dad said, do whatever you want.
He was just kind of, he just like kept his hands off. And he was just like, all right, like just, you know, he just supported me how he needed to support me. But, you know, yeah, I think where I get my personality from is my mother, because she's so bubbly and so intense, so much fighting passion, fucking let's fucking go, you know what I mean? Yeah.
What does she do?
She takes care of us, you know what I mean? She grew up and, you know, she has all her little side hustles of like, you know, selling stuff and like businesses that she just runs. And I'm just like, she's just a real hustler, you know what I mean? And I didn't really understand it growing up, but now seeing her, I'm just like, wow, you really hustled to take care of us. And that was her full-time job, is making sure we're successful, you know, so.
All right, so tell me about this music the last 4 years. Like, how did you transition into sitting down and focusing and saying, you know what, I'm going to become this thing right here. Like, I'm going to write the music, I'm going to perform it, I'm going to get on stage, I'm going to do backflips, the whole nine.
Dude, a lot of it is just kind of natural. It's kind of weird to say. Like, of course, I guess if we start out with, like, the makeup thing, right? So I watched this David Bowie documentary, and then...
the most recent one that came out four years ago?
It was something with Mick Rock, who was his photographer. And, you know, coming from the photography world, I wanted to understand. You know, and Mick Rock, I think he explained how, you know, David Bowie was just David Bowie. He was just a kid singer. He was just singing, right? But when he put on the Thunderbolt, became Ziggy Stardust, he became something bigger than himself. So you need to find that identity and that alter ego to attach to, right? And
that's when
make
you can
believe in something.
Yeah, wow.
Right? So I was like, you know what? Put on this makeup. And sure, some people might not like it. Some people would be like, oh, that shit's like weird. That shit's da-da-da-da-da-da. But people don't realize. I was like,
it liberated you.
Yeah, because this is not me anymore. I'm not like so attached to this thing that's like, oh my God, like this is like my heart and soul. And it's like, yeah, it's a piece of me, but this represents way more than me. And I think that's why when I get on stage, I'm like, fucking crazy. You know what I mean? I'm free, essentially. I put on the mask so I can be free, essentially.
So you know what it makes me think of? Like, when I think about like fucking artists, if you're painting, if you're singing, if you're creating music, if you're writing books, I think the important thing is like, it's all there.
Yeah.
All this rage, all this angst, all of this creativity is inside of us already, right? And then it just needs that proverbial like thunderbolt to like unleash.
You're like next level,
right?
Yeah,
it opens you up, and I think that's the difference about like the Vietnamese culture, is that we're not given license to just put a thunderbolt on and just be us.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes, and that's what I want to do too. Like, I think in a lot of like, especially Asian American males, like, you know, putting on makeup and, you know, like essentially just taking care of yourself and looking cool is like kind of feminine, and people are scared to be feminine. So I want to also show that, like, yeah, like, sure, I'm like painting my nails and I'm dressed like this and I put on some makeup and then you see me on stage. And that's a very masculine performance of me doing a backflip, jumping in the crowd and stage diving and fucking screaming at the top of my lungs. If that's not the most primal fucking masculine thing, like, I don't know what the fuck it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's challenging these certain norms that also push me to make these decisions to do what I do. And now, you know, of course, like, there will be those like old school, super hip hop, masculine guys that like say something, but I was like, okay, like, let me see you do that. You know what I mean? You're on stage rapping like that. I was like, that's not. And you're also performing to a crowd of like 100 dudes every night. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want just dudes at my show. I don't know. So I was like, you know what I mean? So you can kind of like fuck with them and be like, oh, like, who's more masculine? A guy with like, you know, a bunch of like beautiful women and like super cool artists at their show, or a guy performing to 100 dudes. You know what I mean? It's kind of funny to like fuck with people like that. And then when you have that, when you're not able to just like, you know, I have the performance to back it up, but also you have to be able to roast on these motherfuckers. You know what I mean? Make them feel a little dumb every now and then. And that's okay. You know what I mean? People need to be humbled. And, you know, I hate the injustice of always like the bullies always winning. I don't know. Maybe I watched too many superhero movies growing up, but you know what I mean? I love bullying the bully, essentially.
You know, the genre of music that you do, you could have picked anything,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But you pick a very high energy type of genre of music. And I think about, again, going back to like what's inside of you, right? What's inside of you, and you put a thunderbolt on to unlock the doors, right?
Mm-hmm.
To just become you.
Yeah.
Have you seen a different growth trajectory since you've unleashed it?
Or oh,
do you feel
for sure.
the same person from day one?
I think it's proved to everybody, you know, I started like going out and partying with it on, right? And then people started taking me a lot more seriously. It's kind of like a interesting thing, you know, like, you know, when I would go out and dress regular, like, people, especially in Los Angeles, they're just like, oh, you're kind of like a regular person. But, you know, when you put on the mask and you put on these like clothes, and you know what I mean, you put on the gear suit, you know what I mean, and then they're like, oh, you're a superhero, you're an artist, I believe in it, right?
Because so, you believe in it.
I live it, you know what I mean, you just do the things, you know. And sometimes, yeah, like, you put on the makeup, and at first I was like, yeah, like, I feel kind of stupid doing this, and that's okay. But the thing is, if this is why I always say, when people call me fearless, I'm like, yo, I'm not fearless. I'm scared every day. The proper way to say it is like, dude, you're so brave. And that's what I want to show people, right? Like, this isn't about being fearless, because that's not the emotion that I have. I'm scared every day. But when you're brave and you do it anyway, that's where the real power is, because you're still fighting for it. So, you know, I think the greatest compliment, someone was like, dude, you're so brave, and you're really putting yourself out there and being vulnerable and doing this, because I think that's one of the hardest things to do.
You know, I'm going to quote Ocean Vuong. I'm paraphrasing what he's saying. This idea of cringe culture.
Yeah.
Where we like, we put something out and we're like cringe about like our own performance.
Yeah.
You don't have that.
I do, though. Behind the scenes, I'm like, oh, damn, it's just like not cool. And I was like, but also like, man, I got one life to live, bro. Like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
Fucking put it out, bro. Someone's gonna say, yo, that was dumb.
That was cringe.
Yeah, I was like, okay, bro, like, cool.
But how do you live with it? How do you live with that? Like, when you look at something and you're like, that shit doesn't sit well with me. I'm cringy looking at my own work.
Well, I think, you know, I work in so many different areas of music, and I think there's so much acceptance for even things that I don't like. And I was like, wait, but like someone else out there likes it. So
yeah.
And once realizing that, I'm like, okay, there's going to be people that don't like my stuff, and that's totally fine. but there's going to be people that really love my stuff and it's for them. I don't need to speak to everybody. You know what I mean? I want to be able to relate with everybody, but my music is not for everybody. And that's totally fine. It'll find its group of people. And you know what I mean? And that's cool.
The music business has changed a lot.
Yeah.
So how do you do this? How do you make economic sense out of a model that's really broken with Spotify,
dude, streaming? It's so fucked up right now. But I think that's where I'm still trying to navigate too. You know, luckily, like my photography is also so adjacent with music. So as I'm working in photography, it still teaches me how to make better music. And it just teaches me how to be just better, I guess, you know? So I think as long as I'm chasing art and I can sustain a living,
doesn't matter.
I'm just happy, man. I'm just happy to be here, you know?
That's how I feel about the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, because somebody asked me today, do you look at it as a hobby?
Yeah.
Did you start out as a hobby? No. Yeah. It's my life energy.
It's just what
it is. What it is.
What it is. Yeah.
And I think that's the freedom of a real artist is when you think of it as like, I can't do anything other than this.
Yeah.
It's not a hobby. It's a life calling.
Yes.
And if you have to depend on making money to do this, then what are you doing it for?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah. And there's some artists that only make music. You know, there's people that approach me like, oh, let's hop on this track. But like, yo, like, let's do like a pop song. So like the numbers will do well. I'm like, dude, I'm not worried about the fucking numbers, bro. You know what I mean? And so I think my career is very interesting. Like my numbers aren't dummy popping, but I get all these beautiful opportunities to like shine very brightly. And so, and like those same guys might have millions of streams on Spotify, whatever, but they're not getting the same amount of opportunities as I am. You know what I mean? They've never played like a show the same size of the crowd or like had like these commercials where they're the main star. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that as an example of it's not all about the fucking numbers, man. Like, it's just how you carry yourself. And I don't know. Maybe I am a very lucky person and all these opportunities just like I'm blessed with in my life. You know what I mean?
So. But don't tell me that it doesn't affect you when you think about the numbers. Because it affects me when I think about numbers. Do you think about it or do you not
think about it? I think about it a little bit. And like, sure, like how much more opportunities will come to me if my numbers were fucking insane, right? And yeah, like, you know, like I chase it a little bit, but it's not my like main goal. When I make art, it is not based on numbers. It's based on how I feel.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most honest that I can be. You know what I mean? And sure, like, you know, I'll go and shoot a couple of fucking TikTok things on, you know, performing in front of an iPhone and it's so weird, but I, you know, you do it, you play the game. This is what I chose to do. This is what I want to be in entertainment. So I just got to play the fucking game.
So what's the game? What's the game to get to where you want to be? Where do you want to be? And what's the game to get to where you want to be?
I think it's just continue doing what I'm doing. You know, maybe shoot a couple more TikToks, you know, hop on another podcast or hop on this, hop on that. Just making myself a little bit more accessible. And just, I think what it is learning how to be comfortable with being an idiot in front of the camera. Foolish, you know what I mean? Because people are so worried about looking cool all the time. And like, yo, stop looking so fucking cool, dude. Yeah. I'm so tired of like flexing like I'm sick or like, you know what I mean? It's so, that's corny to me when you're like, yo, you're cool all the time. Like, chill the fuck out a little bit. Let's be fucking idiots together. And that's why when I like hanging out with all you guys, like we drink and we get fucked up and we have fun. We're just like cracking jokes and like, it's not like about being cool all the time. And I think that's freedom, bro.
That's hard, man. You know? It's hard for me because I'm the guy that you just described. I'm that motherfucking guy who's always like, I gotta look cool in front of the camera.
I gotta look cool, yeah.
I'm always worried with my producer. I'm like, dude, I'm like, it's so cringy. I'm like so worried about how I'm being perceived.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't, it's just a personality thing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also like the Asian American identity thing because we're so worried about what other people perceive of us. That's why like we have to continuously, it's our job to the universe to put ourselves out there continuously, be vulnerable. We should get shit on a little bit because that means you're moving the needle a little bit. You look at all the great artists, everyone gets shit on. And if you're not getting shit on, then that means people probably don't care. You know what I mean? And even if there's days that people, you're like putting out all these things and you're like, dude, does anybody even hear me?
Yeah.
Is anybody listening? You know what I mean? And I don't know, when the negative stuff kind of comes in a little bit, like, that means people are hearing you and you're challenging things. And that's art. You have to want to move.
Somebody I respect so much recently told me that.
Yeah.
I put out these clips talking about our generational trauma with our parents.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, every time I watch it, like, it's so cringy to me.
Yeah.
And then there's like comments, like people are like, blah, 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 negative comments.
Yeah.
And then that person said to me, if people don't engage like that,
yeah,
you're not doing the right thing.
Exactly, bro.
You're not doing it.
Yeah.
You're not, like, people don't care. And if people just, because there are a lot of Instagram pages where there's like a lot of followers.
Yeah.
But there's no engagement.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
not people like fighting back or fighting each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, you kind of need that, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird thing.
It's
but you
such
know, yeah.
a weird thing.
Yeah. But then you go to like the MoMA, right? And then you see this picture of a fucking flower and you're like, yo, this is dog shit. Like, how the fuck did this make it in? Why is this $20,000, right? I could fucking do this fucking yesterday, right? Like, whatever. But I think it's like the intentions behind the piece, but that's also like, yeah, I'm talking about it.
Right.
So who's the fucking loser that I'm shitting on it? You know what I mean? Instead of, but now I'm like, oh, yo, that's like a cool piece of art. Like, I wonder how it got here now. Instead of shitting on it right away, I'm like, oh, I wonder how that got here. Like, what's the story behind all these, like, whether it's like politics or someone really loved him or he has an insane backstory that got that, you know, flower or just a fucking bunch of splashes on a fucking canvas.
Yeah.
How did this get here? And you know, you see all these like TikTok music. A lot of it's ass. A lot of it's the same thing over and over. But why is it so famous? Why does everybody resonate with it? How did it get here? And that's just, it's art, dude. So it's subjective.
Have you been to Vietnam?
I have not yet.
Why? Why have you not?
I haven't found the call in, bro. You know what I mean? I haven't found the call in.
What do you mean you haven't found the call in?
Well, I think I was never really like accepted by the Vietnamese community like that, you know, only until recently, until I met you guys. You know, I feel like a lot of the other Vietnamese creators in Los Angeles, everyone is such a lone wolf. And I don't know what that is.
Vietnamese creators in LA are lone wolves?
A lot of us are lone wolves. And like, we'll talk to each other, but like, we'll never like all like have a fucking powwow and get down, right? And I don't know if it's because, you know, I think we all came from such a interesting place.
Yeah.
Is there like a scarcity mindset? Like, do you want to be the one? Do I want to be the one? Like, why are we kind of?
Or it's like, I don't want to be associated with another Vietnamese.
Right.
Then we're all Vietnamese. Yeah. And we're like, wait a minute. We want to like maintain our own identity.
Right. So I want to be the guy doing like with
mainstream.
Them,
yeah.
Right. You know, I want to be the token Asian in this community, whatever it was. Right.
It's still going on.
Yeah. But I think now what we're building is like, yo, we're all coming together. Like that, the Hennessy event with Demon Slayer. Shout out to Demon Slayer.
That was a badass event.
Oh my God.
We were all wearing out yais.
Yeah.
Were you? You didn't wear
I was eye. Wearing some. I was wearing some kind of outfit. I don't
yeah.
know.
It was a badass event. Shout out to that event. Yeah, with Demon Slayer.
But Demon Slayer is doing a very good job
really
of bringing the Asian American or the Vietnamese Americans. And then like, and then just oh my God. He's doing the culture right. You know,
so right.
Yeah. And I went to another couple, I'll say this. I went to another couple like alcohol beverage sponsored events for Lunar New Year's. And then you could tell who's running the event that they're not really embedded in the culture. Just because you look a certain way does not mean you're embedded in the culture and you can give a authentic experience, right? So I think there's all these people throwing money at the wrong places. And you know, I think it's beautiful that we have a time where like Lunar New Year's can kind of get exploited for money and stuff like that. And there's so many events, but yeah, some events are really shitty. And I think Demon Slayer is doing such a good job of bringing an authentic Vietnamese American experience of like culture.
So what would it take to get you to Vietnam right now?
Fucking plane ticket right now. Easy, dude. Easy. I think I'm open to it now.
I honestly think, Bobo, if you went to Vietnam and you collaborated with some rock artists, some rap music people, some pop music producers, like your energy would be really different in the scene in Vietnam. I really hope you open to the idea of going to Vietnam.
Yeah. I am now. I think I'm just, after I wrap up a couple things this year, I think I'm going to try to do it this year. this might be the year, you know? And before I was like, no, I want to blow up in America first, because essentially I see Vietnam as like a small pond, right?
Oh,
like,
small?
Yes.
Dude.
Well, the thing is, okay.
It's 100 million people. It's a third. It's a third of the size of the Vietnam of America. Think about it. It's 100 million people.
I think I'm talking entertainment-wise on how effective it is in pop culture, right? Because
American pop culture, how effective it is for mainstream pop culture?
World pop culture.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's going to be right behind Korea. I'm telling you.
I believe that too, actually. I believe that too.
I just went to a concert in January, 50,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
Subin, Binzi.
Yeah.
All these guys performing on stage. I went to a very chill one, more like Hangdun, right?
Yeah.
In Dalat. I'm telling you, man, like, you missing out. You don't see what is going on in Vietnam.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Okay.
In Vietnam.
Okay. Yeah.
You need to get back there and put your creative energy into the entertainment world of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And look, you ain't going back there to help Vietnamese people. They're going to fucking help you.
I think that's the whole irony of the situation.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I think that's the funny part, that where I'm being challenged mentally and spiritually and whatever.
I'm
that
I'm here to challenge you.
Yeah. And I love this. I love being challenged and being like, you know what? Like, nah, fuck that. Because like in LA, essentially, this is the world stage. If you blow up in America, you blow up in Los Angeles, you can do anything you want around the entire world.
Look at Bad Bunny.
Yeah.
Look at Bad Bunny in Spanish. Look at K-pop.
Yeah.
Look at all these guys performing in their own language.
Yeah.
And they're importing their culture back into America.
Yes.
You got to like open up and see Vietnam is not fucking around in entertainment.
Yes.
They are not joking around.
Yes.
They got they're coming up with their process and their factories pumping out these artists. It's amazing.
Dude, I actually saw something that you posted the other day about the K-pop industry on like how when they first started, you have to copy, and then eventually you'll find your own identity, right? And I think Vietnam is going through that right now.
Right now.
They have to copy, but it's almost like a copy of a copy that's like, so it's like a little faded, but I'm very excited to see the day that they find their own identity. It's like, yo, this is the Vietnamese sound, bro. You know, and that's what I'm looking forward to. So that's why I would like to.
I'm going to say this now. I'm going to say it because Nam is my social media producer. And I'm going to introduce him shortly in one of my podcasts, sitting with him. And I'm going to tell you, he comes from a band called The Flop, right? And The Flop, everywhere I go in America that knows Vietnam's music, I talk about The Flop. I'm like, oh, that the lead guitar player, the guitar player from The Flop. And they all know.
Yeah.
And some people trip the fuck out that this guy is producing for me, right?
Yeah.
But think about this. The influence of a band in Vietnam that's been playing for the last, I don't know, 3 years that blew up, right?
Yeah.
Where is that going? They're growing, right?
Yeah.
And then he's now playing with, you know, band members here.
Yes.
You need to find your tribe within that kind of like that category, right?
True.
And build it.
Yeah.
And join forces with Vietnamese people who are talented and young.
Yeah.
Because these guys know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And we need to like get together and bring all the music and all the sounds and the artistry together to kind of push forward.
I agree with you.
You know, it's one thing to blow up in the mainstream, but it's another thing to really leverage what we have in Vietnam. So really check it out.
Okay. Yeah. I'm open to it now. So that's why I was like, all right, like if you're going to challenge me, I love a good challenge. You know, I'm like,
because I'll tell you what you have that they don't have.
Yeah.
You have this fearless energy. Mm-hmm. I don't give a fuck energy. I'm going to put the thunderbolt on my face energy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they have it in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I'm sure that they have it. It's not like they don't have it, but I'm sure because I know a little bit about them and about you, that they could use your spirit and energy,
and
you could use
just as much as I can use theirs.
Totally.
Wow.
And ain't nobody like you. Ain't going back to Vietnam to help nobody.
Yeah.
You know, it's just collaboration between the two countries, right? The two mindsets.
Yeah. And I think that's where I had to change my mindset. I was always like, I need to be this thing before I go back home. And maybe that was a trauma response on like, you know, like I need to become something great or they're not going
to
accept.
Listen to the K-pop.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's like a deep trauma thing that maybe I got to work myself.
You got to work through it.
Yeah.
Because if you listen to K-pop, right? All the BTS shit is all speaking English.
Yeah.
If you listen to the rap music in Vietnam, they all have some English in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So now the components of English and Vietnamese, English and Korean, English and Spanish with Bad Bunny, it's all like intermixing now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're taking parts of cultures and different, so let's bring it all together.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're the guinea pig.
Yeah.
I always say that.
No, that makes sense though. Like this is, we're all building something for the future. Even if I don't fucking make it, my fucking kid is gonna make it. You know what I mean? That's like for the kids.
No, you're gonna make it. You're gonna make it.
I appreciate that.
You'll make it.
Yeah, man. But what's been going on in your life recently?
Thanks for asking. I love this.
I want to know about you too, bro. I've been talking about myself for too long, so you know.
I love it. I love it when my guests ask me what I've been up to. I am, you know, last year I produced 2 films.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to do all my podcasts. I try to do 100 podcasts a year.
Holy shit.
Right?
Oh my God.
So last year I only did 60.
Yeah.
So this year I have to make up 40 episodes this year plus the 100 that I'm supposed to do.
Okay.
So I'm trying to release 3 or 4 podcasts.
Wow.
A week.
Yeah.
Yeah. To make up that schedule.
Yeah. That's insane.
This year, because of Nam helping me out and my other social media producer, Dana, I have 2 social media producers. If you look at my content now, it's like it's an expansion.
Oh yeah. It's great. I love it. I was like, oh, he's ramping up right now. We ready, bro.
Ramping. Yeah. Because I didn't have to produce the 2 films that, you know, this year.
Yeah,
so I'm a little bit more free.
Yeah. I saw you had a con recently.
Yeah.
I love that motherfucker, bro. Oh my God, dude. He's sick as fuck.
Yeah. I feel like he realized how popular he is.
Yeah, dude. It's funny.
Met him at the Hennessy party.
Yes, we all, that's when we all hit it off. And then, you know what's funny? Last week, I was like walking out and I saw some kid wearing his hat. And I was like, yo, you know Con? He's like, no, I just love the stuff.
Oh,
and I was like, oh shit. I was like, that's my dog, bro. Like he's dope as fuck.
Was it a Vietnamese kid or?
I think he was just a Filipino kid.
Wow.
And I was like, oh shit, it's not even like a Vietnamese thing. It's just a
thing,
but it's a thing. And how beautiful is that?
Yeah.
So shout out to Ka, bro. Like it's not just a Vietnamese thing. It's just an art thing.
Yeah. And LeBron was wearing his hat.
That's amazing, right?
Yeah.
And then this kid's like, oh no, like look at my cart. He bought the whole Nordstrom collection. I was like, yo.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I sent it to Khan right away. I was like, yo.
That's the thing about Khan and you is the confidence to say, I'm a fucking artist. I got this.
Yeah.
I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going there.
Yeah.
Fucking fearless. You don't give a fuck about like what people think. And Khan is the same way. When I met Khan, he was like, I know I'm great.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck.
Let's go, dude.
Yeah. He's like, I'm great. And I'm damn. Like, you know, I met him, you know, that night and we went out to get Korean barbecue after. And I was like, what the fuck? Where is this? Where are you from? He's from Ohio.
Yeah, like I don't know what the fuck is it. Anybody in Ohio. So it's tight seeing him.
So what else am I doing? I cover food a lot now too.
Because
I have a background in food. I've been,
Lore drop, bro. Okay.
Two restaurants before. I had a food business for 12 years at the 626 Night Market.
Oh, what the hell? Okay.
Yeah, sick. I'm one of the OGs at that market.
Oh,
yeah.
What?
So I made pho tacos.
What?
For 10 years, I made pho tacos.
Whoa, okay. Yeah.
So I would take brisket, cook it in pho broth.
Yeah.
And then we chopped it up. And then we made pho tacos. And I sold it.
Whoa.
I fed my family for 10 years doing pho tacos.
Dude, what the hell? I had no idea, dude.
So yeah, so I'm doing more food videos because my passion is like Vietnamese food, right?
Yeah.
I love Vietnamese food. I love how it's changing. I love the old dishes like thịt cang, like blood soup, you know, the blood stuff.
Yeah.
I love.
I need to go out to eat with you more because I only really ate Vietnamese food that was like in my household. We would like go out on special occasions, but a lot of dishes I don't really know, you know?
Yeah.
Sure, there's like variants that like my mom used to make, and I was like, oh, that's what it's called. Like,
Vietnamese food in America is stuck in a time capsule, right? Our food is like from whatever, 1950.
Whatever.
Yeah, 1950 to 1975, right? We have a very specific food list, right? We have pho, bun bo huế, all those, right?
Yeah.
But in Vietnam, it's like shit's changing. It's evolving, right?
Holy shit, yeah.
They're making spring rolls with like, you know, salmon and mayo. And
whoa!
It's like mind-blowing, right?
Okay, yeah.
So they're doing shit in America. They're catching up because a lot of the wave of Vietnamese chefs are coming, like key concepts in Orange County.
Oh, dude, they're just the best, bro. I was like, yo, this is fire. I was like, hey, people can hate on the fusion shit. I was like, I kind of love it. It's growing. It's like art, right? It's like, oh, you're taking this culture, this culture, this culture. You got to mold it all together, right?
Yeah. So I'm using this episode to talk about you who really is not really inside of the changing evolution of the Vietnamese culture worldwide.
Yeah.
I'm using you to say, hey, Bobo, like, it's massive. It's a lot bigger than you think it is, right? The evolution is huge.
Yeah.
It's a machine that I'm only covering 1% of the changes that are happening.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, we'll go out for food. But so I'm covering a lot of food now, right? Like, and I always thought of it as, like, low-hanging fruit to me. It's just like, you know, like, it's not worth covering. I'd rather cover, like, academics, the history of Vietnam.
Yeah.
The linguistic side of Vietnam for me was, like, always more challenging, right? What's important is the food is traveling, you know?
Yeah. It's an art culture in itself. That is art on how people like mix things together. So it's, I think you, I feel like you think like an artist and you're just more of a natural born artist of like, oh yeah, I want to like mix all these things together, whether it's like people and food and culture and cultivate it and give it like a voice. And that is like a beautiful art to do, bro. Yeah. And I really support you.
And my job is really to grow young artists like you.
Yeah.
That's my job in the world is to really say, hey, Bobo, you can do this.
Yeah.
Because you know you can do it.
Yeah.
But let's find a way to like use our Vietnamese culture in every way possible, whether it's from the words, the food, to the business leveraging of Vietnam's business people.
Yeah.
All of it. Let's bring it all together. And let's like smash it like
let's
the
fucking go, dude.
All right?
Let's fucking go, dude.
Thank you so much. How can we check out your music?
On every streaming platform, I go by bobo.xx. Just type it in. You'll check it out. I have a song called Thin Line dropping soon. Or it'll probably be out by the time this comes out.
When does it drop?
Haven't decided yet, but it'll probably be at the end of the month.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. One more time? Check out Thin Line. Out now under bobo.xx. And thank you for having me on the Vietnamese podcast.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate it. It was a lively conversation.
Yeah, it was great. We could talk for hours. I'll see you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.